Hey there, listeners. It's Jeremy from the show. Our whole goal at the show is to help small businesses and entrepreneurs, and we want to do that as best as possible. So to do that, we are going to give away free sponsorships to the show. It's very easy to apply. I'll give you the details to that in just a second. But first, if you're enjoying the show, please give us a review. It really helps us spread the word. Go to rateouropodcast.com and leave us your review, and we really appreciate it. Now, to get a free sponsorship, go to mmsponsor.com and apply.
As entrepreneurs, like, we are, our brains are so full at the end of the day. So having a way to kind of take the load off so that we can show up performing highly the next day. So there's all kinds of stuff like that. And then you can get really in detail with it in terms of looking at how technology can be used to biohack. But like a lot of the work that I do, like for the most part, most people will get results with changing the immediate things that don't have to be overly complicated.
Jay Sloan, I gotta say, this may have been a favorite interview I've had, just because there's a lot of hacks, and I started to play around with some of these ideas. I'll tell you what I was doing last night, testing out one of her ideas. So without any more ado, Tanessa Shears comes on. She explains biohacking. I think something every entrepreneur, every person can use. And she talks about the main categories of where you can biohack. I think it's a fascinating interview. So listen on in.
Cool. I'm excited.
Oh, good. Good.
Yeah.
So we got to start off with the biohacking. Like what does biohacking mean?
Yeah. So biohacking is essentially, well, it's hacking your own biology. It's doing experimentation on yourself where you can have effects on your longevity and your health, but it's in a way that you can measure it. So we're not just like, oh yeah, well, I'm going to start taking 8,000 steps a day and we'll just see what happens. It's a measurable way of saying, okay, what are the outcomes? What are the results I'm getting because of the efforts I'm putting in?
Okay.
Yeah.
Did at least the modern version, was it Tim Ferriss? Is he the one who popularized this?
I think it was Dave Asprey, but they both might have done it.
Okay. Well, tell me. Yeah. I'm not familiar with Dave Asprey. Tell me about Dave.
Yeah. He's like the father of biohacking. So he popularized it like a long time ago. And he has like some goal right now to live to like 180 years old, basically by hacking his own biology. And he goes into some really neat stuff like, you know, electromagnetic fields and certain foods that you eat at certain times. And he goes really in depth with it, which is fascinating. Always watching him being on the forefront of kind of what's coming in biohacking, which is super cool to watch.
So how did you get into it?
You know what? It was by accident, completely by accident. I was sitting in bed one night reading a book with my husband, and I look over and I'm like, why don't we just cut out sugar and flour for like 30 days and see what happens? And he's like, well, what do you eat when you don't eat sugar and flour? I'm like, well, we'll figure it out, but I just want to see. And it was so interesting. And I didn't know that that's what I was doing at the time, but I was essentially doing something that was directly going to affect the energy output that I had. And we found that by the end of that 30 days, like the clarity of thinking and energy and sustained just motivation throughout the day was so different in just how my body and my brain felt. So that was kind of, we stumbled into it by accident by just being like, hey, do you want to cut out sugar and flour for 30 days and see what happens?
I love it. I got to ask the same question your husband asked. Like, what do you eat when you don't eat sugar and flour?
Right? I mean, we were the people that had like spaghetti at least a couple times a week, sandwiches for lunch, cereal for breakfast. But there's actually so much to eat and so many flavors of foods that you don't explore when you're just used to going to pasta and stuff like that. Like for breakfast, we're always eating like avocados and eggs, and we do oatmeal. For lunch, it's always like salads and salmon. And there's so many great things like rice and quinoa and so many different things. Like, have you heard of a Buddha bowl?
No. What's a
Buddha? Buddha bowls are essentially like they're these giant bowls. Like I go to IKEA to get bowls this big, and you just stack as many vegetables and it's all kinds of things like that in them. They're just like the most delicious salads without being the boring salads that we're all used to getting.
Like romaine lettuce and maybe a cherry tomato.
Oh yeah. No, these go far into it. They're like sliced up eggs and they have sprouts and there's so many different kinds you can find, but it really opened my eyes to like, huh, healthy food can taste good. And that's what really I was like, yes, more of this.
I love it. So let's talk about like the different categories of biohacking. What are they? Sleep is perhaps one.
Yeah, there's sleep. I find, and especially in the work I do, like I think that sleep is the biggest one that will change the way most people experience their daily life. Okay. So yeah, sleep, the way you eat and the times you eat and how you eat, so important. Managing chronic stress and your environment and your blue light exposure during the day. And also things like cognitive load detox is like, as entrepreneurs, like we are, our brains are so full at the end of the day. So having a way to kind of take the load off so that we can show up performing highly the next day. So there's all kinds of stuff like that. And then you can get really in detail with it in terms of looking at how technology can be used to biohack. But like a lot of the work that I do, like for the most part, most people will get results with changing the immediate things that don't have to be overly complicated.
Yeah, it's funny. So the president of our company, Kelsey Ayers, and I were talking just last Wednesday, whatever. And she's like, we're making a critical decision for the business. And she's like, I'm overwhelmed right now with decision fatigue. Mm-hmm. It's always a little micro decision. It's like, I'm in no state to make a decision because I can't make my best decision. What if that plays into the cognitive load detox? Is it?
Yeah. Well, and we've probably all heard it before, but you only have a certain number of good decisions in a day. It's kind of like a fuel tank, a gas tank. You wake up in the morning and every decision you make is a load on your processing power. So I like to reserve that for the things that are going to make the biggest difference in my life, whether that be with my business or my personal relationships. So really prioritizing that and then making sure that I'm supporting that with the input into my body, whether that be sleep, movement, nutrition.
All right. So then let's start with sleep. I'm super curious about that.
Yeah.
What are the things that you've tested out in yourself? What do you suggest we test out?
Oh, I've tested out a lot of things. Actually, it was like early last year, I decided to do a sleep experiment and document the whole thing on Instagram live. Like, here are all the numbers from my sleep tracker. And today I'm going to start cutting out blue light 2 hours before bedtime. Here's what happens. And I had that play out over 3 months and show people the effects of, okay, when I implemented this strategy, I got the biggest bang for my buck. This one, not so much. And then I kind of created, I guess it's kind of like a journal that I kept on Instagram. And I found a lot of people were engaged in that, seeing it firsthand. But I mean, the single biggest thing that made life-changing differences in my business was specifically doing a circadian rhythm reset. You heard of circadian rhythm?
I have.
Yeah. It's that concept of following your body's natural sleep and wake rhythm. And that means going to sleep relatively at the same time each day, give or take 20, 30 minutes, and waking up at the same time, even on weekends. And that allows us not only to optimize like our sleep hormones and everything like that, but to take advantage of, you know, the cortisol upswing when we wake up so that we're fresh.
And does it also play into sunlight, daylight or night, no delight? You know what I'm trying to say? does it play into when the sun sets and the sun rises?
Yeah, and naturally it'll shift. Like in during the summer, that's kind of when we found our rhythm shifted in our house to like a 9 to 5 rhythm, because the sun's coming up at 4:30. I just started waking up at that time naturally. And then as the winter comes, you know, I find myself waking up maybe closer to 5:30, even 6, just because I don't have the sun waking me up. So 100% the day light during the day can affect that.
So how do we get into that rhythm? Is it just when I feel tired, go to sleep, and when I'm awake, wake up? Or
yeah. Well, all of us genetically are determined to be either night owls or early birds. Like, are you a night owl or an early bird?
No, early bird.
Well, yeah.
5:30 usually is when I'm up.
Yeah, me too. And so about 50% of that is determined by genetics. And the rest of it is a bit of habit and routine. So when we started kind of being like, okay, well, let's just set a regular bedtime wake up time, we set like a 10:30 to 6:30 rhythm, because that kind of seemed to be in the middle. So we started going to sleep at that time and waking up at about the same time. And we started noticing that naturally it was really easy to keep that rhythm. And then what I started doing is when we looked at like things like blue light, so things that disrupt your natural rhythm, when we started manipulating those and moving those around in the night, like, so for example, I stopped looking at screens an hour before bed. I found that without that artificial disruptor of my rhythm, that I actually fell into a 9 p.m. to 5 a.m. rhythm quite comfortably. Like, I wake up not tired, fully ready to go. And that's where I've landed when I'm not artificially keeping myself up, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So you said you and your partner did this at the same time. So I'm married.
Yeah.
Is it important that my wife and I have the same sleep patterns? We share a bed.
Yeah. It's not essential, obviously, because like we said, it's genetically determined. And if some people are going to be up till, I have clients that are up till 11:30 or midnight, but they sleep till 8 or 9 and it animals works quite well
animals
for them.
Animals are animals.
Right. But no, it's definitely a work in progress always, because like who you sleep in the same bed with affects your sleep. Like my husband, even this morning, we were up at 3:48 AM because he got up and we're both naturally woken up, right? And so having someone who is in a similar rhythm is going to be a lot more helpful, but there's always strategies you can put in place. Like a good eye mask, some earplugs, and a sound machine will do wonders to help tune out any disruptions from our partners.
Use all three of those. Yeah. Tell me about the blue light. I don't know what that is. I've heard it. I don't know what it is.
Yeah. So all of our devices, whether that be your phone, your tablet, your TV, your computer, they emit a frequency of light that's blue light. It's a certain frequency of the light, as opposed to like, you know, there's red light and orange light and yellow light. But blue light specifically has a higher impact on our brain. And when it enters our eyes, it suppresses melatonin production. And melatonin is a sleep hormone that signals the body like, hey, let's go to sleep. So if I'm staring into my screen 5 minutes, or, you know, scrolling our phone 5 minutes before bed, you're essentially putting the brake on melatonin production. So then we turn our phones off and we're like, I can't sleep. I can't fall asleep. Why can't I stop thinking about things? Yeah.
That's interesting. Okay. Yeah. So the circadian rhythm, the blue light, is there other, so the extraction of blue light, meaning you turn off the phone or whatever. Are there other things you do that you use to hack your sleep?
Yeah, absolutely. About an hour before I go to sleep, I turn the temperature in my room down to anywhere about 18 degrees Celsius. So that's about 65 Fahrenheit. And it's quite cool. But the neat thing is that temperature drop that it allows my body to go through is another thing that helps enhance melatonin production, which is really, it's kind of like a 1-2 punch with the removal of the screens, or like putting things in place to eliminate blue light and the temperature drop.
You know, so interesting is when I hear biohacking, it sounds extreme. Like,
doesn't it?
Oh, I got to inject some, right? Yeah. And you're like, oh, just drop the temperature degrees and you'll have a significant change in the way you sleep. Well, what about the time we need to sleep? I hear everything from you got to sleep 8 hours to some people saying, well, you know, I'm a leader. 4 hours a day is all I can afford.
Yeah, I just don't buy into the whole I can get by on 4 hours of sleep things, because when we go to sleep, there are certain phases that our brain goes through, which are they're so important to who we are as entrepreneurs and how we function, our creativity in our business. And specifically at the beginning of the night, our brain goes through the majority of its deep sleep. And what actually happens is during that deep sleep, the brain actually contracts a little bit to allow for our spinal fluid to get in there and kind of give our brain a bath. Because as our brain thinks and makes decisions and processes during the day, it releases metabolites. And there are things called beta amyloid proteins. This is, don't need to know these words, but essentially they accumulate on the brain, and they have found that in people that have Alzheimer's and memory loss, there's a high accumulation of these beta amyloid proteins. And the best way to get like to reduce the amount of them is by getting quality deep sleep. So by cutting down to 4 hours of sleep per night, there is no way you are getting enough quality sleep, whether that be the dream sleep or the deep sleep, to effectively show up the way we want to be showing up as entrepreneurs.
Now I have one of these silly watches. Silly because, oh, there you got one too.
Yeah.
Said something to me like, oh, maybe, I think you said this to me. We were talking before doing this show a couple of weeks back. And I remember you saying something about people tracking their sleep on their watches and how they slept based upon what the watch said, and guilty as accused. Is that a problem? Should we be tracking our sleep?
Yeah. Well, think about this. It would be like trying to figure out how much money you had in the bank account with no way of looking at your bank account. You'd just be like, well, I don't know. I think I have enough money in the bank, but without actually being able to see it. Cause our brains don't have like a printout every morning being like, excellent. That was enough deep sleep. You had a great amount of dream sleep. Have a wonderful day. We just wake up and we're like, well, I'm kind of groggy. I feel like I was kind of had my eyes shut for 8 hours. So let's go with it. And that's what most of us experience it. But without a way to quantify it, we have no way of knowing we're doing enough or improving it.
Right. But I think the flip happens too, is that some people gauge the quality of their sleep based upon what the computer says.
Oh, absolutely. I had worked through that whole issue with a client because she kept telling me like, I'm so tired. And I was like, okay, are you letting technology tell you how you feel? Or are you actually waking up and being like, How is it? And I had to do that this morning, waking up. So like, I was like, okay, it's 3:48 in the morning. How do I feel before I look at the numbers?
Okay. So that's the hack. You make the determination before. Here's something interesting that happened this morning to me. Yeah. I woke up and I was like, oh, I feel groggy. The rain coming down, felt groggy. I was my watch and said, great night's sleep. You know, your BPM was down to 52 pulses and you got, you know, 3.5 hours of deep sleep. I was like, oh, I feel great all of a sudden. So I don't know if that's a placebo effect. If that's reality.
Well, you know what it could be also? One of the beautiful things about having a natural circadian rhythm and having to never use an alarm clock is your body is so smart. It's naturally going to wake you up at the end of a sleep cycle. Right? Mm. So if you happen to have woken up in the middle of a deep sleep phase or a dream phase, your body's going to take time to adjust and get out of that. So that'll be that grogginess. So if your body is naturally, like I find I'm up between 5 and 5:15 most mornings and I feel wide awake because my brain is like, excellent, long enough sleep, great quality sleep. I've done my sleep cycles, awake.
That's interesting. Yeah. For me, the same thing. It's such a predictable pattern now that I've been watching it. It's around like 4:30, I'll the first wake up, I'll look at the clock and say, okay, it's 4:30, I have another hour or so. Yeah. And I'll close my eyes and usually it's 1 hour later. I mean, right on the nose.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that. There's hacks to that. I want hacks.
Sorry, you cut out there. Say that one more time.
Oh, managing stress. You said there's hacks, biohacks to managing stress. So this is the stuff I want to talk about. How do you hack stress?
Yeah. So there's a couple things that I like to do. So one of them is really allowing your brain to have a single-minded focus at the end of your day. And I learned this idea from Cal Newport, and he wrote that book, Deep Work. Such a good book. But he really talks about the idea of, so picture yourself on a walk or cooking. You know how you kind of have that loose focus? It's a single activity you're doing. Your brain needs to kind of go through that to allow it to just kind of relax and restore. And, you know, so it's not always processing and decision-making and responding to emails and making decisions. And it really is that kind of softening of thought that allows you to recharge. So that's one of the ways, and that's a really easy way that any of us could do. It's really just learning how to be present in every day, playing with your kids, cooking a meal, going for a walk, reading a book. But one of my favorite ones that I actually found recently, I found an app that I've actually started using, and it uses the idea of entrainment. So our brains have brain waves, right? So when you're alert, your brain waves are at a certain frequency. When you're sleeping, they're at a certain frequency. So what this app does is it produces music that has an underlying frequency that allows your brain to sync with it. So our brains love to sync with things. So a good example of this is if someone is prone to having seizures and there is a light flickering at their seizure frequency, they will have a seizure. Well, our brains also like to sync with things that create relaxation and create sleep. So this app that I've been using, it's actually super neat. It plays music, which is in, say, alpha frequency, which is nice and relaxed. And I play this and my brain waves will actually sync with this frequency and bring my mental state to a place of relaxivity. And you can choose focus, you can choose deep sleep, you can choose relaxation, you can choose meditation, but it's essentially a way of like, it's like a TV programmer. It's like, I want to feel relaxation right now. Let's tune into that frequency. It's so neat.
What's the app called again?
Yeah, it's called brain.fm. I found it literally like a month and a half ago. And I'm I play this. This is, I think, my biggest secret for productive days in my business is I put on the focus tracks.
Yeah.
And I can, you know, it feels like there's like flames coming out the back of my brain. I'm just like, I get everything done. It's phenomenal.
So do you know, though, could this simply be a placebo effect? And if it is, I mean, does it even matter?
Ooh, the brainwave thing?
Yeah.
That's interesting. It could be, but it is interesting. I almost experience, especially during the focus ones, like my brain actually kind of just feels like it's like a tingling kind of, is just very focused and aware, like hyper aware. Yeah. So it could be, but regardless, if I'm getting everything I need to get done in the day before 9 a.m., like sign me up.
Yeah, exactly. Like, who cares what the science is, as long as it's not doing any damage, but it could be science. You know, we didn't prepare like a list of 20 tips. I'm curious, with managing stress, is there anything else that you can give us as a biohack you've done?
So breathing is actually another really simple one. There is a breath technique that I actually learned when I did cognitive behavioral therapy, and it was, it's called square breathing, and you might've heard of it before, but it's essentially the idea of regulating your inhale, exhale. So you would breathe in for a count of four, like inhale 1, 2, 3, 4, hold for 4 seconds, exhale for 4 seconds, hold for 4 seconds. And it's a way of calming down your stress, your fight or flight nervous system, and allowing your body to kind of slip into that bit more of a relaxed state. So that really helps.
That's interesting. Yeah. So I want to go into diet, but before we do that, I just want to know, like, for yourself,
yeah.
Is this now a lifetime endeavor of just hacking, or is this a means to an end?
It's kind of like the idea of entrepreneurship. The idea is to continue to serve and to grow, but also to enjoy where you are in the moment. I feel like that's the same way with biohacking and health. Like, I feel like there's always something new you could be learning and you could always be growing. But I think it's like every little step is something that I get to like enjoy and explore and share, right? Because everything I learn, I get to share with my clients after I've tested it on myself and my poor guinea pig of a husband.
Poor guy.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a job anymore. He's just your guinea pig. You're like, yeah. Shut up and listen to this, this brainwave on Brain FM.
Yeah.
So your client, so you've monetized this too, right? So you provide, you study this on yourself and then you start monetizing it by serving clients this. How's that work?
Yeah. So I do it through one-on-one coaching. So it all started, you know, I was a personal trainer for years and years and years. And then over time, as just any good entrepreneur does, you're continuously self-educating. And I slowly started to figure out what an effect nutrition had on health, and then sleep had on health, and then stress manage it. And it's kind of snowballed into this beautiful practice of like brain and body optimization as a practice, and as, you know, implementing it with systems and strategies and measuring results and seeing if what we're doing is working, you know, towards whatever the client's goal is. And it's usually something to do with like, I'm so bothered by waking up exhausted every day, and I want to be able to go home at the end of the day and play with my kids and not feel like I need to sleep.
So playing a little bit of devil's advocate here. So I presume some clients may say, you know, I'm 50 or I'm 70 and I have these issues going on. You're not. You have the advantage of youth on your side. Biohacking someone that hasn't experienced those things. As people age, maybe their needs transform. So what's the resistance you get from someone who says, well, you haven't been there yet. You haven't done that.
Yeah.
How do you navigate that?
Yeah. Well, first thing I ask is like, why would you choose to let that limit you? Because you know what I mean? Like there are definitely certain biological things that happen. Like a really good example is as we age, the amount of deep sleep you are able to achieve actually decreases. So if you're comparing like a 30-year-old to a 50-year-old, whereas a 30-year-old might get an hour and a half of deep sleep tonight, a 50-year-old might only get 45 minutes. So there are 100% things that are like that, but that's where we also adjust our expectations. But I often find there's so many clients that come in with just these beliefs that are set in stone that really limit them. Like I've had clients say like, oh, I'm going through menopause, so you just need to know that this is what you're dealing with. And I always like to tell them, let me help you with that. And it's amazing how often just our thinking and our beliefs about things can really prevent us from taking steps to find out if that's actually true before we've made a decision about it.
Yeah. And you know, to your point, like there's a fitness trainer that I've worked out with who's a woman. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, I have a guy's body, so you just don't get it. And she's like, I've worked with hundreds, if not thousands of clients before. Yeah. I get it more than you get it by far. So it's interesting. And I also find it interesting that people are set in stone. You know, I hang out with my friends and they're like, oh, you know, I'm just turning 50. Oh, we're in our 50s now. Like all my old high school friends and stuff. They're like, we're so old. And the terms they use are so framing them for failure and struggle. I'm like, don't call me old guy in the group. Like, I don't want to associate with this mentality.
Right. Our thinking affects how we
find that to be a big challenge for any kind of improvement is this identity and frame we set for ourselves?
Yeah, people are coming to us with identities that they have clung to for a long time. Like nothing has ever worked for me before, or I suffer from insomnia, or I can't control my food craving. It's not just a fact about who they are externally, it's become who they are. So really, and it's so interesting, even though a lot of the work I have to do is with like biohacking and really, you know, sleep and stuff like that, there is so much work around breaking beliefs about what is possible for us. Like if you're going to believe that I can't possibly change the way I eat because you don't understand, I don't like vegetables. Well, what is the chance of that actually succeeding? So it's really having to look at where did that thought process come from? and that belief system come from? And is that something you still want to hold on to at the expense of your future?
Yeah, so effectively, there's some psychological work that needs to be done to get people in a position to actually taking these steps. I'm curious, just as an aside, my wife has had trouble sleeping. She got a weighted blanket. Have you ever tried one of these things?
I haven't, but I've heard they're wonderful.
Oh my God, amazing. And I wonder, so you haven't tried it, but I wonder for certain people if one hack works better than another. For her, the weighted blanket with the sound machine, with all these different things, the weighted blanket was the win. Mm. When it comes to what works for you, does that mean it's going to work for other people? Do you have to test it out? How do you find what works for me?
It's all testing and looking at data. Like, so for example, there are certain things that I know that, okay, well, if you're constantly experiencing gas and bloating, I'm going to start here. If you're constantly experiencing trouble falling asleep, I'm going to start here. If you're dreaming, you're not dreaming enough, I'm going to start here. Like, I have like a list of solutions that I like to go through. And these are solutions that have not only worked on me, but I've read about in research, I've tested with other clients and other people have found success with. So it's really just a matter of like making sure that as the part of evaluating what worked, what didn't work, what are we doing differently next week? Because we don't want to spend any more time putting our energy into things that aren't giving us more energy out than we're putting in. So we're constantly evaluating, was this worth our time?
All right, well, let's talk about putting in. Let's go on to diet. You talked about avocado. Mm-hmm. You had me at avocado. I love avocados. What are some of the things we can do with our diet to biohack?
Yeah. So one of the, I think the first thing I usually start my clients with, and to a little bit of their disappointment, is I always ask them to do 30 days of no sugar and no flour. And this isn't because these foods are bad, because I eat these foods. But what I want to do is there's two things. I want to look at how intricately their mindset is playing into their food intake, because if we can't commit to something for 30 days, our issue isn't our food. It's our ability to commit to whatever, because whatever we need to choose to do with our nutrition needs to be long-term. Like, this isn't a 3-week game, a 3-month game. We're looking at changes that make you feel better for the rest of your life. So that's number one. Number two, I want to take out the things that are usually causing us the most brain fog, the most bloating, and the most problem to begin with. So I can almost kind of clean the slate so that when we add it back in, we're like, oh, well, notice that. Like, I had a client that started with me recently and she had daily headaches that she just kind of thought were just normal for her. And we pulled out sugar and flour for 30 days, headaches gone. And now I get to say to her, why would you want to put that back in?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's actually interesting because now she has a comparative, right? It's not a norm. It's being triggered by something.
Yeah.
Are there certain foods that are riskier for people, the ones that we should avoid? Maybe it's the flour and the sugar. Is there other things that we should avoid? And is there certain things that we all should be doing?
Yeah. You know what? And that is part of why I do so much measuring of results, because there is no one thing for everyone. Like, for me, if I eat broccoli or quinoa, I get stomach aches and bloating. Those are on the healthy food list. So that is why we need to continue testing. But as a whole, there are definitely some foods which make some people react worse than others. And we test, because just because somebody doesn't work well with dairy doesn't mean somebody else won't. But the usual big ones are the sugar, anything with flour in it, usually alcohol has an effect on a lot of people. Sometimes eggs are not great with people. There's a whole class of vegetables called nightshades, which includes like your peppers and your tomatoes, that will cause people a lot of, you know, gastric distress. So it's looking at those and helping kind of fine tune. What we do is we create a protocol, like, how can we eat in a way which makes our body feel best? And every week we update that. So yeah.
I love that. So, and to do that, I guess you just track what I ate and how I reacted to it.
Exactly.
Is that simple?
It's so simple. I have my clients every day, what they ate, at what time, how much, and were there any unwanted symptoms? And I give them a big list, because there are so many things that we do not attribute to food. So things like, do you feel joint pain or gas or bloated or headaches, or do you get hungry within an hour or two after eating? That's not normal.
Well, with Chinese food, everyone gets hungry within an hour or two. Just let that be noted.
Yes, because it goes right. It's like all the oil. I hear you. But we're looking at those kind of things, because what some of my clients come in and they're like, well, I'm always hungry. I work out a lot. I have to eat every hour or two. I'm like, well, I'd rather look at the composition of your meals and look at why you're getting hungry. Why aren't you being satiated? Why isn't your body fulfilled with that meal? And we start looking at things like fats and proteins and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That brings me to the frequency. Sometimes I hear 3 meals a day is right. Some people say 5 meals a day. Someone says always be eating. Another one says actually go into these fasting periods. Like, I'm confused.
Yeah. So the principle that I go by, and I learned this from Dr. Jason Fung, and he wrote a book called The Obesity Code, which is, it just completely cracked my mind open into how I've ever experienced food. And it talks about a hormone called insulin. So we've all heard of insulin, but we always relate it to diabetes. So, you know, diabetics take insulin, but what insulin actually is it's a hormone in all of us, and its job is basically to take the blood sugar and to put it where it belongs, muscles, liver, body fat, and stuff like that. So in order for us to have, you know, clear thinking, and in order for us to tap into stored body fat, we need to allow that hormone to drop. So if you're constantly eating throughout the day, meaning you have like lunch, snack, breakfast, snack, lunch, snack, dinner, after snack, you're constantly bumping up that hormone insulin, and it never allows us to tap into body fat stores, and that it's constantly having blood sugar in the body. So what I like to do is I like to get the exact same amount of calories in 3 or even 2 larger meals and allow our insulin levels to drop in between, allow our blood sugar to return to a baseline. And if our body needs energy in the meantime, we all have plenty of body fat that it can munch on and we can dine in.
That's funny. I like that.
Yeah.
All right. The last topic I wanted to talk about was this cognitive load detox. And what did that mean again?
Yeah. So imagine a day where you've had to do like a lot of either cognitively demanding tasks. So decisions, interviews, talking to people, maybe you're writing sales copy or something like that. And our brains are very taxed by the amount of effort that they have to put in. And it gradually increases the load on our brain. So you think of it like, it's like a scale. Every time you make a decision, it's like one drop on the scale. And eventually the load gets very heavy. And you'll notice at the end of the day, that's when you're most likely to go and grab like carbohydrate dense foods, or you're more likely to crash on the couch. You're just like, the last thing I want to do is work on something creative. So by doing a cognitive load detox, I like to give my brain the chance to kind of like do something that enjoys for the sake of enjoyment. And it doesn't have to be like doing self-care. It doesn't have to be bubble baths. And I think that's where we get mixed up about it. I just like the idea of like, well, what if I spent 15 minutes reading a fiction book instead of a business book tonight? Or, you know, what if instead of having the TV on while I ate dinner, I just ate dinner? Or instead of a conversation with my husband while playing with the baby, while cleaning the kitchen, why don't we just play with the baby? You know, it's giving our brains the option of single-minded focus on something that is not demanding.
I love it.
Yeah.
Anything else on the CLD? I'm particularly thinking of that decision fatigue, because so many entrepreneurs listen to this and we are constantly, it's a stream of decisions.
Yeah.
Is there things we can do to kind of control the inflow, not just the inputs like television stuff, but just the questions and the email and stuff that comes in? Is there ways that we can control them kind of getting to us in the first place?
Yeah. One of them is to stop believing that multitasking is an effective way to do our work. So like I will look and I will do checks all day. I'm like, how many tabs do I have open? Because I find that there's a direct correlation between the number of browser tabs open and the number of tabs in my head. Like if I find it's been a day where, you know, I'm designing something and coaching clients, I will have like 30 tabs open and I can feel that I'm like, okay, we're needing to kind of detox down here, and making sure that when I'm doing my focused work, that all the pings and dings are shut off. Emails closed down unless I'm doing email. Text messages are silenced unless I'm doing text messages. And focusing on keeping everything a single task. Do what is in front of you, complete it, and then move on. If it needs to be interrupted because it's urgent, do just that task and then come back. Instead of trying to flip between things, it just really drains our power to make good decisions.
Wow, this is such an amazing experience. With the list of all stuff you gave, I hope our listeners take one action on one thing and start improving their biology through a biohack.
Absolutely.
Vanessa Shears, the master biohacker, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
Shlone.
Yes.
Is your life permanently, are you hacking yourself like after listening to this thing?
Doesn't sound good the way you phrased it, but
hacking away.
No, I'm glad that we did this one, because I actually have sleeping issues. I have sleep apnea.
Oh, do you really?
Yeah, and I did a sleep study. It was a few years ago, and the best part about it was it's such a pain in the neck, and it's expensive,
right? Yeah. And my whole goal was to get a CPAP machine. And I finished the study, and I met with the doctor afterwards, and I said, you know, do I get a CPAP machine? And she's like, unfortunately, according to the insurance requirements, you we're not going to give you one. And I said, well, do I not have sleep apnea? She's like, oh, no, you have sleep apnea. But your heart only stopped 3 times, and for them to give you a machine, it needs to stop 4 times.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah. I was like, okay, great. Thank you. You've been so helpful.
Oh,
So yeah,
that's a dangerous, it's not a disease, but what is it considered?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's just hereditary. My father has it. My brother has it. The doctor told me that it doesn't matter. You know, even I'm in the process of losing weight, and trying to be healthier, but even
that's a big deal too.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. But even if I'm down to, you know, the ideal perfect weight, I'll still have it. It's just, you have a soft palate, and your throat closes up, and it causes you to snore.
And you don't even know necessarily you sleep through it basically, right?
So I've learned I can't sleep on my back. If I do, I'll wake up with a sore throat from just constantly my throat being closed off. So I sleep on my stomach, which keeps my airway open. I still snore. Yeah. So I'm going to get, I need to get a CPAP. I'm going to have to at some point. Because it's very taxing on the heart,
on the heart and the body. Yeah.
And I can't even remember the last time I had good sleep. So I know that my energy levels are all jacked up because of it.
Yeah. Well, maybe something in this interview. So what did you take away from the interview that maybe you can try to sleep?
I mean, so many things. I mean, she just every all the little tips that she was saying about, you know, the circadian rhythms and falling asleep at the same time.
Yes.
Not watching a screen an hour before you go to bed. I'm notorious for that. If I can't fall asleep, I'll play on my phone until I get tired, and then I'll go to sleep.
Right.
You know, so it's I'm better off reading a book. I just don't, you know, you just got to get in that habit. But yeah, there, I mean, she had there's a lot of good stuff in there. I think that, even just listening to it, you start to recognize the little things that you do that you could change in order to make it better for you.
Yeah. So I'm doing too much of the phone before bed. I'll pull out the iPad and just, you know, I'm on this like pickup truck thing. You know, what I figured out too is I'm getting more joy out of the search as opposed to buying. So I wonder if I'll keep on searching for like 2 more years.
That's the best part, searching. And it really, and you're like, you like get all excited. You're like, oh, look at that option. Look at this option.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm doing right now. So all the options, like, oh, I could do this. And I'm like, that's overkill. I mean, even having one's overkill for me, but that's what I'm doing. So what I did last night is just read a magazine instead of the computer. But the other thing I did was the box breathing, I think she called it, hold four. And I woke up twice last night, you know, to full consciousness. And I was like, oh, let me try this box breathing. And next thing I knew, I was sleeping again and waking up. So I can't, you know, one day's experimenting is not proof, but it was interesting. I just love the list of ideas. Like I was a little bit nervous asking her to say, well, do you have something else about managing stress? She's like, oh yeah, this. I'm like, do you have anything else? You know, this wasn't prepared. She didn't send me bullet points in advance. And she's like, oh yeah, this. There was a lot of these hacks. I liked that some of them were just really simple. I mean, the breathing technique, that brain FM, I got to check that out. I haven't yet. The frequency we eat, avoid one food item. The other thing is too, is interesting. She said bloating, gas, headache. I've been actively just watching that myself. And I found that rice, I have to get, when we get sushi, I have to get the black rice. I have a reaction to black rice. So I was like, oh, next time I get sushi, I'll get white rice, which I did. No reaction. I was like, oh my gosh. Like those little hacks are just sometimes just paying attention.
Yeah. You know, like little tiny things like vitamin D. So almost everybody is deficient in vitamin D.
Yeah, that's what I heard. Yeah.
So you should really like focus on getting your vitamin D levels up. And I think, and I drink a lot of coffee, and I think coffee has a negative. Maybe it's not vitamin D, but it's one of the vitamins. It depletes. But according to studies, I mean, almost everybody can supplement vitamin D and you'll be okay. You don't want to go crazy, but we're so low on it that it changes your mood. You have better sleep. You have more energy during the day. I mean, you know, so that's something little that you can do.
So for our listening friends, I want to know what you're trying. You got to start doing some of these hacks and see how it serves you. So post that in the ratings and review. Tell us what you're doing. I'd love to hear it. And the rating review, more than is about sharing what you have experienced, because for other readers, it's also serving us. If you rate and review it, it expands the exposure for this podcast. So we'd really, really appreciate it if you take the moment right now. You're on your phone right now anyway. Could just hop in and do that. It'll take less than a minute, and I'd really appreciate that. Jay Sloan. Oh, and let me share her website. So let's do our game. The website for Tanessa Shears is Tanessa Shears. It's spelled T-A-N-E-S-S-A Shears, S-H-E-A-R-S.com. Of course, we'll have in the show notes, TanessaShears.com. And follow her on Instagram. It's Instagram.com/TanessaShears. All right, what do you got for a gameage?
All right, brain trivia.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So we're talking about bio. All right. So the brain composes about 2% of the body weight. But what percentage of energy does it use?
Hmm.
Is it 10, 20, or 30%?
Okay. I think I got that one.
Okay. Without cholesterol, your brain starts to die. What percentage of cholesterol is contained in the brain? Is it 5, 15, or 25%?
Of the body's cholesterol? Okay.
Your total got cholesterol.
It. I'm nailing these.
All right. And then last one. A piece of brain tissue the size of a grain of sand contains 100,000 neurons and 1 billion synapses. Insane. All communicating with each other. How many cells does the brain contain on average? Is it 520 million, 32 billion, or 86 billion?
Okay.
All right. Question one. The brain
Composes
2% of the body weight, but uses what percentage of energy?
I'm going to say 20%.
It is 20%. Yeah.
Nice. And the reason I'm saying that, it's the Pareto principle, the 80-20 rule, right? So it's like, the rest. Yeah.
That's cool. So
that's why I go.
Oh, there you go. It worked out.
Worked out.
This is fascinating. I didn't know this, that your brain depends on cholesterol.
Yeah.
So without cholesterol, your brain starts to die. What percentage of cholesterol is contained in your brain?
I wanted to say 25%. I may be a little over.
It's 25.
Yay! I'm on fire.
Yes. You're using your gray matter to answer your questions. So 25%. That's crazy. 25% of your cholesterol is in your brain. All right. And then a piece
It's all bad cholesterol. Fatty. Wasn't it fascinating that the brain shrinks when you sleep? When she said that, it goes through like a brain bath.
Yeah. You know, the brain shrinks when you work out and sweat. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah. There's so many things that I found out. That
Dude, everyone's brain's shrinking right now is listening to the show.
Yeah. I mean, like some of the stuff in here is insane. Your brain weighs 3 pounds. 60% of the dry weight is fat, making the brain the most fatty organ in the body.
Unbelievable, right?
90 minutes of sweating can shrink the brain as much as 1 year of aging.
What?
Yeah. And then this one was crazy. It only takes 2% dehydration to affect your attention, memory, and cognitive skills.
2%.
Yeah.
Isn't that unbelievable?
So that's why they say drinking water is
key.
Super important. Yeah. Okay. So the third question, piece of brain tissue, the size of a grain of sand contains 100,000 neurons and 1 billion synapses, all communicating with each other. How many cells does the brain contain?
All right. So here's the one I kind of split the difference, and that's risky. You know, it's more likely the higher number, but I picked 32 bill.
86.
Billion. Yeah. You know what? I should have gone for the bigger number. I knew it. Always trust your first instinct.
Yeah. But hey, still 2 out of 3. That's not bad.
2 out of 3. Yeah. For me, that's a miracle. For me, it's a miracle. Yes, that's a passing grade in some countries. All right, my friends. So here's the dealio. We hope you had fun playing that game along with us. Hope you learned a lot from Tanessa Shears. I really do want to know what you are applying in your biohacking. And here's the deal. Email it to me and Jeremy. Email askmike@mikemikalowicz.com and say, hey, here's something I did. So it doesn't have to be a question. And here's what I experienced. We'd love to hear because we can explore it on a show. And if you have a question about your business or any element, something you want to hear, also send that question. So askmike@mikemikalowicz.com. Make sure you sign up for our YouTube channel, Mike Mikalowicz. You're going to get really good at spelling my name. And visit my website, mikemikalowicz.com. Yeah. I think we covered everything, Jeremy.
I think so. I think we got it.
All right, brother. Let's get out of here.
All right, guys.
Bye.
See ya.